This is Central Time. Last week, the Odysseus lunar lander touched down near the south pole of the moon, the first U.S. spacecraft to reach the moon since 1972. The lander was built by the private company Intuitive Machines. It was launched on a SpaceX rocket, carried experiments, and had support from NASA. The spacecraft is already powered down during its landing. The Odysseus tipped over onto its side, limiting its solar power supply, cutting the mission short by a couple few days. We're looking at the mission and what's next for lunar research. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this lander's trip to the moon? Future missions? What do you think about the idea of NASA partnering more and more with private companies to explore the moon, asteroids, other planets? What kind of space research do you want to be done? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Joe Palca covered science for NPR for 30 years before retiring in 2022. He's reported on many space missions over the years. He's following this one too. Joe, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here.
All right. Over 50 years since we landed something on the moon with or without people on board. How big a deal was last week's landing?
Oh, well, if you listen to NASA, they're I'm ashamed to say this, but they're over the moon.
I was waiting for it.
Somebody had to say it. I'm really sorry about that. I apologize to everyone in the audience. it's a big deal. It's hard to say, well, it wasn't a total success because, as you say, the lander kind of tipped over and a lot of the data that was supposed to come back to the ground is kind of trickling in rather than pouring in. And it is going to end a few days earlier, a few hours earlier. In fact, because it's tipped over, the solar panels are not pointed optimally to the sun. And the sun is going down where the spacecraft landed anyway, but they think it's only going to last a few more hours from right now. Mm. There was just a news conference there where they were saying 5 hours, and that was about an hour and a half ago. So, it's hard. People think, oh, they see the things land on the moon, and they think, on Mars, and they think, oh, that doesn't look so tricky. It's not easy. And the other thing they like to point out is that they did this mission for a much, much, much smaller budget than a lot of the other NASA missions. This was in the range of $100 million, which, it sounds like enough to run a public radio station like quite a lot. But it's not that much for a space mission. And, the people who organized this said, look, we were lean and mean. We had to figure out our problems. We didn't have all the kinds of redundancies and rechecks and checks and checks and checks that would normally go into a mission. Normally, I say the way NASA used to do these, what they call, starship missions. They were considered a big buck event.
There's a lot to get into here. One is this public-private partnership, NASA working with private companies to do this kind of project. Do you see this as the way of the future?
Well, yes and no. I mean, NASA has turned to private companies for launch services. They're using private companies now to shuttle astronauts up to the International Space Station. The whole world of space exploration has changed dramatically. And I guess I covered space for a lot of years, and I always think of, oh, okay, I'll go down to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and I'll watch the latest landing on Mars, or I'll talk about what's going on at Saturn or something like that. It's always been NASA. And believe you me, NASA still has its, its press machine and others talking about this NASA mission. But in fact, it was this company, Intuitive Machines, that built the thing. And I think it's going to be more common that not NASA. I mean, what's the difference between telling Intuitive Machines, here's $100 million, make a spacecraft, versus NASA building it and sending it to Lockheed Martin and saying, you build it for us? So, I mean, it was always private companies that were involved. NASA doesn't make all this stuff itself. Mm-hmm. But now this other company is running the show, essentially, and the control room is in their building, not in NASA, a base around the country.
Let's talk about the neighborhood on the moon. This was close to the South Pole of the moon. I keep hearing South Pole is a point of interest on the moon that we need more research on. What's going on there?
Well, there's some interesting things that they've discovered at the South Pole. There are the moon is a very strange place thermally, strange, because if you're in the sun, it's absolutely boiling. And if you're not in the sun, it's this almost close to absolute zero. I mean, it's very cold, very, very cold. And so there are places on the south polar region of the sun where at the bottom of craters, which are, there's craters on the moon, of course, they're so low to the horizon, they never get sun or almost none at all. So they're very cold. And it was a surprising thing a few years ago, it's longer than that now, to discover a signal of water in these craters. And the question is, where'd it come from? How much of it is there? And wow, is there any way we could get at it? Because if you think about going to the moon, the big issue is, you have to bring everything you need with you because, there's not a lot. There's nothing built there yet. Water is a very important starting point. You can use it to make rocket fuel. You can use it to make oxygen. You can use it to do a lot of things. And if you don't have to carry the water with you, that's a lot of weight that you're not expending. So NASA and scientists are very interested in understanding how much of this water exists. And is there water elsewhere, which there seems like there may be in very small amounts? And what form is it in? Because is it bound to other minerals, or is it free water, or is it just an OH molecule, which I'm sure you remember from your chemistry days?
We're talking to retired NPR science correspondent Joe Palca about the Odysseus lander, which touched down on the moon last week, and its role in ongoing moon-related research. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions for Joe. What do you want to know about this mission or its place in the world of space exploration? What is your priority? If NASA knocked on your door and said, hey, where should we put our efforts? Where would you point them toward? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to longtime NPR science reporter Joe Palca about the latest on missions to the moon after the Odysseus lander made a mostly successful landing last week. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about moon research. That's 800-642-1234. Joe, this Odysseus mission isn't the only thing in the works. There's this Lunar Trailblazer satellite. What's that project all about?
Yeah, that's actually what got me interested in this Intuitive Machines mission. Lunar Trailblazer is the name of the other mission that I'm following. And there are others besides that are being considered, including another commercial type mission later this year. But Lunar Trailblazer is actually being built by Lockheed Martin, as it happens, but for the Caltech and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And it's supposed to go there. And as I said, it's going to orbit the moon around the pole so that it'll come over the South Pole. And it has what are called spectrometers on board, or a spectrometer that will look for the signal that's coming back from the light that does reach the moon and analyze it, because it has a characteristic signal for water. So you can look at this thing and look at the signal from the spectrometer and say, oh, there's water there, and this is the kind of water. That mission, the reason I got interested in Intuitive Machines 1 is that mission is a tag-along mission. It doesn't have a dedicated rocket. It's going to fly on the rocket that is launching Intuitive Machines 2 to the moon later this year. So I've been interested in, I knew that Intuitive Machines 2 wasn't going to go until Intuitive Machines 1 succeeded. And now that it has succeeded pretty well, they are going to go forward with Intuitive Machines 2. But it was interesting at the press conference, somebody asked, oh, well, when is that going to happen? And it was noticeable that there wasn't an answer. So it's not going to be soon. It may be this quarter. It may be much later in the year. probably much later in the year. That's the way these things tend to go. And you know, they want to, lessons learned. They want to make sure there are all sorts of, I mean, I get into this, and the things that go right are interesting, but the things that go wrong are even more interesting. And they had some incredible challenges on this mission to land on the moon that they had to tackle in real time, amazingly quickly. And the funniest thing, and this is a little technical, but I'll see if I can explain it. So on Friday, they came to this press conference and says, wow, we had this amazing success. We had an instrument called a LIDAR rangefinder, and it wasn't working. We discovered almost by accident it wasn't working. Holy smokes, what are we going to do? Oh, yeah, we have this experimental machine that NASA's given us. It's not supposed to be used in operations. It's just supposed to be tested on this mission. Could we use that to land? And the answer was, well, yeah, we could. And so they were bragging about, and justifiably, that they were able to reprogram the computer and test it and get it all ready. And they had about 90 minutes, literally one revolution of the moon, for them to do this new software and load it up and get it running. And today, so that's the story. And they said, that's how come we landed successfully. Today, they said, actually, no. the computer got the instructions, but there was a single line of code that they forgot to put in.
Oh, no.
That would have, you know, said, okay, not only are we giving you these new instructions, you're supposed to act on them. And they didn't. It didn't. I mean, it was a piece of code that was, you know, way, you know, if you've done any programming, there's sometimes things that are way distant from where you're actually writing the code and in a different part of the machine. But anyway, it was not what landed them. They landed using an optical system, but they weren't even talking about that on Friday. They didn't know until they got some data back after the landing. So, wow. I mean, so interesting that they're able, first of all, that they're able to make these changes on the fly. That was amazing. And then second of all, to find out that they even had a backup for the backup plan that was already pre-programmed into the machine. So I just think the technology is wonderful, and you know, it's only going to last a few days on the moon. What is also they were saying is, well, you know, it's going to get sunlight again in about 3.5 weeks. We're going to see if it'll wake up, because it's actually going to, the solar panels will work, but they're worried that the batteries will conk out. You know how you guys in Wisconsin know cold, so you know the batteries don't do so well in cold weather, and they're not sure they're going to be able to take a charge. So anyway. But the moon, the missions coming up are focused on this question of water. And that's what Lunar Trailblazer is going primarily to look for.
And Joe, before we let you go, we've got this Artemis series of missions, kind of a sequential step of things that ultimately will, if all goes well, land people on the moon again, I believe in later 2026. How important is that, do you think, to have humans on the moon to be part of this research?
Well, this is fascinating. Well, you asked a question before the break about, you know, what do you think the audience, what do people think, where should we go? Why should we go to the moon? Well, I mean, I was alive for Apollo, and there were people then who saying, why are we bothering going to the moon? What's there for us? What's it good for? Well, it's considered, in some ways, one of America's great achievements, but we haven't gone in 50 years, as you pointed out. So, was it just to get there and say, yeah, we did it. We spent a lot of money to do it. Do we want to spend that money again? Well, somebody thinks so, because we're going to try. We're going to send a crewed mission into orbit around the moon, according to NASA, sometime late in 2025, and then sometime later after that, one that will land. But really, it's a philosophical question. You know, is this what you want? Is this something that's part of America's culture, ego, identity to explore the moon? Or are we just trying to get there before the Chinese do, because the Chinese are doing it. Chinese are looking to land a human on the moon. So it's really an interesting question about why are we doing this? What's it for? And, I don't have the answer to that. I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. But one thing is true is we're not going to move to the moon. It's not a viable place for humanity to go to if the Earth is destroyed by climate change or something like that. So, or at least, well, I say that, you know, and then somebody will prove me wrong, but not while I'm alive. So I'm confident that it's not going to happen in my lifetime. you know, but it is, you know, do you want to spend the money that way? I know there are people who think there are other priorities that might be more valuable to spend the money on. I'm a science geek. What can I tell you?
Joe, thank you so much for sharing your science geekery with us today.
It's fun. I had a great time, and I hope everybody pledges, because I'm going to do that as soon as we get off the air.
Oh, thank you. That is lovely. Thank you so much, Joe. That's longtime NPR science reporter Joe Palca, now retired, but still watching the science world. We've been talking about the latest moon landings and the future of lunar research.